This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Tomorrow, can anything stop illegal song swapping? The recording industry is betting on lawsuits while the file swappers search for technology that protects their identity. The future of music on the net tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today, movie fans around the world are mourning the death of Katharine Hepburn. The screen legend will be remembered for a long list of film accomplishments. She remains the only actor to ever win 4 Academy Awards, but perhaps even more than the roles she played, she will be remembered as a role model. She was the example that women can be funny, smart, and tough. She played against charismatic leading men like Cary Grant, Humphrey Bogart, Spencer Tracy, and Jimmy Stewart, and she always held her own. No wonder her life has been the subject of at least 5 biographies. What's your memory of Katharine Hepburn, your favorite movie? Give us a call at 1-800-989-TALK. Joining me now on the phone from her home in Connecticut is Barbara Leeming. She's the author of the biography Katharine Hepburn. She's also written about Betty Davis, Rita Hayworth, and Orson Welles. Ms. Leeming, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for asking me.
As we mentioned, of course, yours is not the only biography of Katharine Hepburn, but you focused a lot on her family's problems, and you started your book 2 generations back with the suicide of Hepburn's grandfather. Why did you start there?
Well, I think the reason that I started there is that for me as a biographer, the thing that's always the most important decision, and it's a lesson I learned from Orson Welles a long time ago, whose idea actually the Hepburn book was that your decision about what he called point of entry, where you start, and that inevitably is going to lead to where you end, is the most important decision you're going to make in telling a story. And in the case of Hepburn, what I realized as I began to do research for the book was that what was interesting for me was not just the story of a movie star, but the story of women's history in the 20th century, which is really what this book is about. And in order to tell that story, I had to tell the story of Kate's mother and sister and her grandmother, because the Hepburn saga and that image of the 20th century modern woman, which Kate embodied, as you were saying, really originates in what Kate's experience was like as a child. I mean, she literally grew up in what I refer to as the war room of the women's movement. Her mother and her aunt were not just soldiers, foot soldiers in, but leaders of the battle for women's education, for the vote for women, and then for birth control. And particularly important for Kate was the fact that her mother and her aunt were leaders in the most violent wing and the most violent period of the struggle for women's rights. I mean, I went to girls' schools and all of my life and never knew half of the stories that I found out in doing this. What Kate would experience as a little tiny thing was sitting there on the floor and seeing the women come back, beaten up. The men were attacking them on the streets. They were being force-fed. They were being thrown against the bars in the prisons when they were being thrown into jail. And Kate saw these incredibly courageous women, fearless women, and understood, as she said to me later, just how difficult it was for women to get the rights that they had, and just how angry men were when suddenly everything started to change around. And I think it was watching her mother and her mother's friends that made her into the kind of person that she became.
Yeah, and also as I was referring to earlier, the difficulty, there were personal difficulties within the family that you write about as well, that are not very well known.
No, it wasn't known at all, actually. I mean, I knew, and I think most people do know, that Kate's brother, her older brother Tom, committed suicide when he was 15 years old, and Kate was 13, and she was the one who found him. And it was a really horrific moment, obviously, as it would be in any child's life. But what's extraordinary about Kate and tells you something about her character, and I mean, I ended up just adoring her, was at the age of 13, her father, who was a doctor and a urologist, was absolutely unable to deal with what was an obvious fact. I mean, I've seen the police reports, I've seen the coroner's reports, there isn't any question that he committed suicide. But her father insisted that it had been an accident. And Kate knew it hadn't been, but on a dime, she turned and she did what her father needed, not what she needed at that moment, because what I then realized was, as I began to do research, and I mean, as you know, you have to do standard detective work, is that Tom had not been the first suicide in the family. Her grandfather had committed suicide, and his brother had committed suicide, and Kate's father's 2 brothers had committed suicide. There's an enormous history of suicide in the family, but one of the things that Kate's younger brother, Bob, was an enormous help to me on this book, and it was he who finally got Kate to talk to me. And one of the things he said to me before I went to see Kate for the first time is he said, you have to know what to expect. He said, I'll talk about anything. Kate won't. And he said, let me just tell you about what our mother used to do when we were children. He said, we would ask her about her father, and he said, always, my mother's reaction was one thing. She would go absolutely silent the minute you mentioned her father, and she would turn her head away and just stand there until we dropped the subject. And he said, I didn't know at the time that he had committed suicide. We just didn't know. And he said, but you need to know that before you go to Kate. And the first time I talked to Kate, the minute that her brother Tom's name was mentioned, and we weren't anywhere near talking about suicide or anything else, the second his name was mentioned, she straightened up, she went absolutely silent, and turned her head to the side and just stayed there until I changed the subject. And the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I realized, oh my God, I mean, this is a reason why you have to meet someone like this. What the whole family did was to deal with the suicides by denying it, by just simply refusing to acknowledge that it had happened.
Now, I wanted to get to, these are two very defining experiences you've described in Katharine Hepburn's life, and that is her mother's involvement in the women's movement and these suicides in her family. Another defining characteristic of her life, outside of her life as an actress, was her relationship with Spencer Tracy. And I'd like to play some tape here first of Katharine Hepburn with Tracy in Woman of the Year. She's playing a sports writer. He's playing a sports writer while Hepburn plays a political columnist, and the two are planning on going to an award ceremony for Hepburn's character, and they're leaving their new foster child at home. Here's that scene.
Sam, we've got to go. Ellen's waiting. And
yeah, you go ahead. You go ahead. I'll stay with him until he falls asleep.
Sam, don't be idiotic. You simply don't want to come to the dinner. That's why you're putting on this paternal act.
I'm not putting on any act. We accepted a responsibility, didn't we?
But everyone will be looking for you. What shall I say you're doing?
Say I'm at home minding the baby.
Oh, Sam, for heaven's
sake. Tell him anything. I don't care what you tell him. Tell him I had something important to do.
Who would believe that you had anything that was important enough to do to what?
You know, it's too bad I'm not covering this dinner of yours tonight, because I've got an angle that would really be sensational. The outstanding woman of the year isn't a woman at all.
You know, I think that Katharine Hepburn's portrayal of herself, in a way, in those films with Spencer Tracy, many people see those women as Katharine Hepburn. But how was the private Katharine Hepburn different from her public persona?
Well, I think her public persona and her private persona were very, very different. I mean, what's interesting about her is when she wrote her autobiography, she wrote it in the character of Katharine Hepburn. When she gave interviews, she gave them in the character of Katharine Hepburn. But when I got her talking about her mother and particularly about the women's movement, I saw something very different. What was surprising to me was I expected her to be smart. Obviously, she was going to be smart. But what I didn't expect her to be able to do was to talk in a theoretical way. I mean, that's not the way she dealt with the world at all. And it was very easy to understand that, yes, this had been a woman who went to Bryn Mawr. This had been a woman who grew up around very intellectual women and men. And she was, I think the one thing that was very sad was that in later life, when her career, you know, was not so dependent on the character being maintained, that we didn't get to see more of it, because she had enormously interesting insights into the theory of women's power and why it works and why it doesn't work. And we never saw that. I think that was very different. I think the other thing about Kate that was very different was, of course, her romance with Spencer Tracy had very little to do with what we saw on the screen. It was a very sad relationship, and I think in many ways, despite the fact that she obviously adored him and kept him alive, it was based on her feeling, and doesn't take much of a psychiatrist to realize this, that after she had failed to save Tom, as she was completely convinced she had, and of course it's not true, she was never going to let one of these men that she loved down again. And she had a history of going for the most self-destructive men, not just in Hollywood. I mean, first of all, in New York, with the poet Phelps Putnam, she found somebody very like Tracy, an alcoholic, a tormented man who was thinking about suicide. Then with John Ford, the director in Hollywood, Howard Hughes, I'm sorry. And then, of course, Tracy. And I think with Tracy, her life was devoted for 3 decades to keeping that man alive at great cost to herself. But she loved him, and I think she accomplished something tremendous with that, but I think at enormous, enormous cost to herself.
Barbara Leeming is the author of the biography Katharine Hepburn. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's take a call now from Greg in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Greg.
Yeah, hi. Enjoying the show.
Good. Go ahead.
I'm just having trouble seeing this radical Kate here. I mean, sure, she was intelligent and spoke up, and her mind was heard, but I think even as you're describing her life in some ways, there's some parallels there to the role she plays in film. And ultimately, in the end, she submits to all the main characters who are male.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I think that was one of the problems. No, her mother and her aunt and her grandmother are, and as Kate was well aware of that, are the great feminists. Kate, in her own life, did not lead the kind of life that her mother would have had for her, certainly. And I think that one of the complications of the Tracy and Hepburn films, and I think it's one of the reasons that younger women have trouble with those films, is that in the end, she is always humiliated by Tracy, put down by Tracy, and it was one of the things that made her mother very sort of iffy about that particular message. I think what is very modern about her is the general image of the athletic, do-anything woman, the fearless woman, the woman who can physically do almost anything and is intelligent. But no, I mean, her life, but that's one of the things you learn as a biographer, you know, that life is very complicated and that the characters that we know on screen are not necessarily like their images, and it's certainly in the case of Kate, what made her interesting to write about are all of those contradictions. Yet in the end, you're enormously sympathetic to her, because even if they're not the choices we would make today, perhaps, they were choices made with the best intentions in the world. And, I mean, she's just, it's an irresistibly complicated life, and one, I mean, you don't get a story like that very often.
Thanks for your call, Greg. Robert in Savannah, Georgia, hi.
Yeah, hi. I met Miss Hepburn some years ago when I was a page for the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. And one of the qualities that I found out about her that I don't think comes across very much through her public persona was her warmth. I think we have a tendency to think of her because of her strength and making choices that other women might not have made at the time. But I went to the Kennedy Center. She's in the play there, West Side Waltz, and I got to know the doorman, wrote a note because I wanted to meet her, and her secretary came up and took me down to her dressing room, and in she walked, and she was about what you would expect, but after I just sort of spouted a kind of, you know, encomiums and, you know, some kind of greeting, she spoke with me a little bit, and I remember her reaching over and saying, "Well, you do have a nice face," and then she gave me a hug, and then she turned around and left. But it wasn't a sort of detached kind of encounter. She was just, you know, made it, you know, every effort to focus on me, to tolerate my a stuttering and a nervousness, and then just gave me a warm hug before she left.
And I would think she would be an incredibly imposing person to meet, I would think.
Well, she definitely, when she walked into the room, commanded it and expected to, but it was with such an ease. And then when she turned her attention to you, she obviously wanted you to feel at ease. And I was surprised by that, because I had, you know, I'd seen her in her movies and saw her as the formidable Kate, but there was a real disarming warmth there. And then 3 days later, she won the Academy Award for On Golden Pond, and I sent her flowers.
Oh, great. Well, thanks so much for that story, Robert.
That was a
lovely story.
Thank you.
Barbara, in one sentence, really, almost literally, we're going to run out of time. What's Kate Hepburn's legacy?
I think her legacy is that she took what the history of women that her mother had created and embodied it for a whole generation of much younger women. She embodied the image of the modern woman that her mother had fought on the streets of Washington to create.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Barbara.
Thank you so much.
Barbara Leeming is the author of Katharine Hepburn, and she joined us from her home in Connecticut. In Washington, I'm Lynn Neary, NPR News.